Welcome to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman, and I come to you weekly to discuss self-care and the art of healing. Check out these statistics. 50% of illness is caused or aggravated by indoor polluted air. Indoor air is anywhere from 2 to 10 times more hazardous than outdoor air. Indoor air quality in the U.S. is the number one environmental health problem. Airtight buildings and homes don't allow in natural air cleansing agents, but they keep contaminants inside. The allergen level in super insulated homes is 200% higher than it is in ordinary homes. That means a baby crawling around on the floor inhales the equivalent of 4 cigarettes a day as a result of outgassing carpets, molds, mildews, fungi, dust mites. Most people spend over 90% of their time indoors. 6 to 10 homes and buildings are considered sick buildings. And since 1976, asthma cases have increased by more than 100%. 1 in 9 children have asthma. Death rates from asthma have tripled and quadrupled in children from 5 to 9 years old. Stay tuned in the next hour as I discuss how to protect yourself and your family from indoor air pollution. First, an editorial about this week's health news by Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett.
Thank you, Lena. Last week, I commented on an FDA panel of experts that recommended the continued sale of COX-2 inhibitors, drugs that are used for pain and also cause heart attacks. In this week's news, it was revealed that 10 of the 32 experts on the panel have ties to the drug industry. Those 10 voted overwhelmingly, 9-1, to keep the COX-2 inhibitors on the market. The remaining 22 experts voted in a substantial majority, 14-8, to pull the drugs off the market. I know, I'm as surprised as you are. Where this sent me first was, I'm really tired of talking about the drug companies. But then it sent me to thinking about why the drug companies are this 500-pound gorilla in our healthcare system. And that made me think of cholera. What killed most people during the 19th century was an infectious disease like cholera. The miasma theory was the dominant explanation, the theory that filth and squalor and unsanitary conditions created an atmosphere, an environment that made people sick. The germ theory was its competitor, the theory that a specific microscopic agent caused disease. Throughout the early and mid-19th century, the germ theory was on the ropes. Then, in a series of experiments in the 1870s, the bacteria that caused diseases like cholera were discovered. With those discoveries, the miasma theory disappeared. The model of a single agent as the cause of disease leads to a model of treatment which attacks that agent. The first miracle drug was penicillin, which killed bacteria, the agents of infectious disease. This approach was so successful at eliminating infectious disease that the germ theory and its model for treatment came to dominate medical thinking generally. Treatment has come to mean finding the agent of disease and then making a chemical that will vanquish it. For every disease, a drug. Even when the agent is something like a diabetic's high blood sugars, which isn't an agent at all. What kills us now are chronic diseases like diabetes and heart disease. But our healthcare system treats these as though they were infectious diseases caused by bacteria. The 19th century epidemics of cholera were stopped long before penicillin. They were stopped by clean water and sanitation, justified by the miasma theory, which said that what causes illness is a foul environment. What prevents illness is a clean environment. And so the miasma theory, in fact, lives on in fields like environmental health and environmental toxicology. Sometimes what you know is that an environment makes you sick. To get well, what you need is to change it, not take a drug. I'm Jeffrey Fawcett. Take care of yourself.
Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett is a political economist, a writer, and health strategies advisor who works with me on the Progressive Health Observer, a news commentary alternative to big box medicine. In addition to his work on the newsletter, he works with people making health decisions. You can reach him by going to his website, inchargeofyourhealth.com, or you can call him at 707-874-1496. So now to our topic for today's show. Today is going to be a solo show. I'll be lecturing you alone today about indoor air pollution. There are a number of things to consider when you look at this topic. The sorts of things that I'll be talking about in the next hour is the easiest ways to avoid the indoor air pollution being created and also being exposed to it. I will also be talking about who's more at risk, considerations for choosing a home or fixing a home up, products, building and painting materials, cleaning and personal hygiene products, bedding and furniture, and also heating. In addition, I would like to also talk a bit about pest and mold control, both of which are very important in this issue. Some of the way that people are getting things in the indoor air quality, some of the ways that this is being compromised is from dust, including breakdown products and dust from building materials and mold, pollens tracked in on your feet, outgassing chemicals, which are called volatile organic compounds, VOCs, from building materials. Also, there's lots of volatile organic compounds in furniture, flame retardants, household products. One thing above all that I want to say before I say anything else, which is one of the most important ways to avoid polluting your indoor air in your house or in your office, is to avoid fragranced products. This includes candles, fresheners, air fresheners, sprays, fragranced laundry products, and cleaning products. The reason that I'm telling you this is because there has been, over the last few years, changes in the science of creating scents. And there's a lot of scent manipulation. One of the things that occurs when a scent is a natural scent, even if it's an oil that's a distilled oil so that it's very strong, a natural scent doesn't last very long. It disperses very quickly. It wears off very, very quickly. So what happens is that in order to create products that maintain a smell, that continue to smell like these air fresheners or these other scented products and laundry products, chemicals are added to make the smell last longer. And this, along with the fact that the scents themselves are created from very carcinogenic chemicals, toluene, lots of solvents and benzene-type chemicals are used in the creation of these artificial fragrances. And then added to these are a number of substances to make the fragrances last for a long time. And I must tell you that they do last for a long time. I had an experience recently of trying to get rid of the fragrance from a quilt that had been washed repeatedly by somebody else in things that, like downy or in fragranced different laundry products. Numerous washings, even using borax, which has an odor-reducing quality to it, didn't work. Even after washing it maybe five times, it still hadn't lost its scent. And the only way that I've been able to get rid of the scent is by leaving it outside in the rain, and it's taken about a month for it to begin to lose its scent. So you have to know that those are not natural scents. If you buy a natural, organic, distilled essential oil, as concentrated as that smell is, it will dissipate within a few hours. So please, among other things, especially for use around young children, avoid fragranced products. Incidentally, the reaction that people who have multiple chemical sensitivities get, the sensitivity to scented products and other chemicals, is not an allergy. It's a poisoning reaction. People who are very sensitive to chemicals have livers, their main detox organ is a little bit sluggish for one reason or another. Very often this is caused by some other problem, like an autoimmune problem. But a slow liver means that these people are bioaccumulating these substances faster than somebody else. In other words, they may go into a room where there's an air freshener and begin to get sick immediately because they're unable to clear the substance out of their bodies as quickly as somebody else. But the reaction that they're getting is, in fact, a poisoning reaction, and it means that anybody exposed to that substance at some point, whether they are aware of it or not, are, in fact, being poisoned as well. So please avoid scented products, not only for your own safety, but for the protection of your children and people in the public at large. So, you know, one of the first things to think about when you're looking at avoiding indoor air pollution is ventilation. I know that this is intuitive, but for some reason people don't remember it. So that means that if you're looking at a place to buy or to rent, what you want to see is windows that open. And if you're buying a house and it has insufficient ventilation, there aren't enough windows, remember that windows are in fact the cheapest thing to add to a house. And having windows so that you have a cross breeze, maybe even adding operational skylights that open, since most pollution goes up, gets carried out out of a skylight. Skylights are incredibly useful for keeping a house aerated and clean. You should have fans in your kitchen and a bathroom, any place where moisture can collect. And under the house, there should be lots of vents to aerate the basement or the crawl space to avoid the accumulation of mold. As I've mentioned before, you must if you're trying to keep your air quality in your house clean, it's absolutely essential to avoid obvious toxins. So that means that you need to shop very carefully, and I'll talk about that. Let's talk for a minute about who's more at risk in this situation. As I mentioned, the people who have been described as people with multiple chemical sensitivities, the early years of the environmental ecology movement where these people were being studied and treated, I think most of the doctors and researchers discovered that this is usually a symptom of some other problem. While it is possible for somebody exposed to a lot of chemicals to eventually have their system break up, since chemical exposure is in fact cumulative, so it gets worse over time and the liver gets more impacted over time and overwhelmed, it is possible to take a healthy individual and overwhelm them with environmental toxins and molds and have them become ill. This does happen, but often when somebody begins to show symptoms of multiple chemical sensitivity, it means that there's some other underlying problem, like an autoimmune problem or some kind of inborn, maybe genetic defect in the way that their body's detoxification pathways work. We've been talking about that on the show, you know, whether or not somebody's has enough of certain nutrients or whether or not their genetics means that they're unable to methylate certain nutrients or even metabolize them properly. So certainly examination of nutrient density and balance is important as well. But some people are rather unlucky, both genetically and, as I said, experientially. Certainly populations most at risk are going to be people of lower economic in lower economic classes, because these people are going to be living in areas that are less controlled. As you know, there are many toxic sites in areas where people with low income live. In fact, a lot of these sites are sort of very badly cleaned up. So there's terrible problems among populations at risk, populations of color, and people who have less money are often living in places where the environmental pollution on the outside is also an issue. You know, obviously old houses with lead paint too, you know, anything where you're dealing with old crumbling housing materials, you will see a lot of pollution in the dust in the house. So keeping the house aerated, keeping it ventilated, keeping it dry, and keeping it vacuumed and clean will make a big difference if you don't do anything else. The other population that's most at risk is going to be children, because a lot of the studies that are done on toxins are done in terms of allowable limits, parts per million. but they're not taking into consideration the size of a person. So when you're dealing with a child, you're actually dealing with somebody who's much smaller, whose body weight is much smaller. And when they talk about parts per million or allowable limits, they're not taking into consideration the combination of various pollutants and toxins in conjunction with each other and what effect they have, since that combination hasn't been studied so far. I just want to remind you, if you just tuned in, I'm Lena Berman. This is Your Own Health and Fitness, and I'm doing a show alone today about indoor air quality, how to protect yourself and your family. I might mention also that if people are interested in getting some information on air purifiers, you can go to my website, which is yourownhealthandfitness.com. And on the home page, I have a link that you can press to make sure that we can get you some information on air purification if that's one of the ways that you want to work on this problem. So what about when you're looking for a place to either rent or own? Now, I had mentioned that it's very important to look for good air, you know, good ventilation. You want to see whether the building that you're going to be renting or buying has plenty of windows. If you're buying the house, you can certainly add windows or skylights. You want to see whether you've got enough underneath the house, whether if you're on the bottom floor, whether there's plenty of ventilation. If you're renting an apartment that's a basement apartment, the thing you're most going to have to be watching out for is mold. Now, mold is a substance that can make a healthy individual sick. It does have a rather profound effect. The studies that are done on mold in various places show that the types of molds that are actually infectious and cause a really kind of infestation and infectious kind of inflammation pattern and illness and a systemic problem in most individuals, these are actually supposedly very rare. But it is the case that if you take a healthy individual and you let them live for a while in a really moldy place, this is going to overwhelm their their detoxification pathways, and it's going to slowly sort of put a strain on their immune system. Let me just take a drink of water since I'm losing my voice here. Hold on. So you want to actually not only walk into a place that you're inspecting for you to habitate. First thing is that you actually pay attention to whether or not you can smell a musty smell in the house, because that's always a good reason to reject someplace. It's very difficult to get rid of mold. So if there's a musty odor in the house and it doesn't, you know, while you're looking at it, you open the windows and it doesn't dissipate quickly, then you want to look for things like vinyl flooring that's coming up in the bathroom around the tub, or in the kitchen around the sink, old carpets. If there's old carpets and you can lift a piece of the carpet, check to see whether underneath the carpet there's a lot of particle board that's soaking up mold. Obviously, if you see dark spots on the walls, that's really, you should just run in the opposite direction, because by the time you're seeing dark spots on the walls, what you've got is an infestation of mold in the wall itself, and the only way to really get rid of that is to actually take the wall apart and refabricate it. So that would be a killer for the deal. I mean, that would be a deal killer for me. Also, check window sashes. Their window sashes, the frames around the glass, are famous places for mold to grow. So if you see some blackness in the crevices around the windows, that can be cleaned and removed. But if you've got very old sashes that are very broken down, keep in mind that those will probably have to be replaced. Mold is very hard to get rid of. It can, there are various treatments for getting rid of it. You can use a variety of things to kill it directly. Some of them are more irritating than others. Obviously, bleach works, but chlorine bleach is sometimes an irritant for people. You can also just use hydrogen peroxide that you get over the counter in the pharmacy, the 3%. Just put on some rubber gloves and take some cotton or some other kind of cloth and wipe it into the areas, or even you can even take a toothbrush if you've got some of some tiles that are, you know, where the grout is moldy, take a toothbrush and use it to clean the grouting and leave it for a while. It'll clean, and it's much less toxic than some of the other kinds of mulgicides or fungicides that you buy commercially. Hydrogen peroxide works quite well. Borates, like borax, also kill mold and get rid of odor. If you're looking at some place to live, you should ask very pointed questions about whether or not the indoor environment was, whether there were pesticides or insect bombs used inside the environment, inside the house. Did people spray for ants? Did they spray for cockroaches? Did they set off a flea bomb in the house? Was the house tented for termites? I would say that if the house has had very, sort of regular use of pesticides, you might consider not buying that house or renting that apartment. Pesticides last for a very long time, and the irony is that although they persist in the environment and continue to cause endocrine disruption, hormonal changes for people, nerve changes and things like that, they continue to be toxic in the environment at low levels. But they don't continue to kill the insects. So they are a very, very poor way of getting rid of pests or insects. If they've been used in an environment, they tend to be present in the wood. They soak into the floors. This might also be a reason not to rent or buy a place, especially if the building has been tented for termites. The chemicals that are pumped into, the gases that are pumped into a tent for termite treatment are among the most toxic of anything that you can be exposed to. Methyl bromide is still used for termite treatments, and it is so toxic that houses in the vicinity of a tented house have shown traces of methyl bromide in it. And methyl bromide consistently has been shown to be one of the most toxic, dangerous chemicals that we still use in this environment. It keeps coming up for to be abolished, to be outlawed, and somehow or another, the industry continues to lobby for its use in planting, particularly in grapes and strawberries and stuff. Incidentally, if you live anywhere near an orchard or a vineyard where you see a plastic being placed on the ground, you should be very worried about that, because that's usually how they apply methyl bromide. And it's also very toxic in the environment when it's used outside and you live nearby. Methyl bromide exposure and other chemicals like it have been shown to cause ataxias like Parkinson's disease and MS. They're very, very toxic. So the other kind of gas that's used in termite treatment is vicaine. And the last time I looked, there really wasn't enough clear evidence that vicaine was safe either. Termites are not that hard to get rid of. If you really need to tent a building, if you are looking at a house and it has termites, the first trick is not to panic, because they're actually not that difficult to get rid of. If you want to tent the house, you can use a heat treatment. I actually had the unfortunate experience of having to pay the additional expense of having a heat treatment done to a house that was going to be tented next to me, so that it wouldn't be tented with a gas. So I and a neighbor paid for the additional cost. So it is more expensive. But the truth of the matter is that any treatment that you choose, whether you tent with a gas or use heat treatment, the treatment will only last, if you're lucky, for a year at the most. Although the gas itself will continue to persist in the wood in the house, in the framing of the house, and continue to be a toxin in the environment. Termites mostly are a problem of moisture and a problem of controlling wood-to-soil contact. These problems can be eliminated, and there are products that are made with borate. Like borax that you put in your laundry. There's a product on the market called Timbor, T-I-M-B-O-R, which some termite companies will use, but they'll tell you that you can't use it yourself, which is utter nonsense. It's extraordinarily inexpensive. It's available from a number of different places. I know in Santa Rosa, California, Northern California here, there's a company called Purity Products, which will sell it to you. It's about $5 a bag. You mix it with water, and you either brush it on with a brush or buy a sprayer and make holes that you spray it into the walls. Anytime you do new construction or renovation on a roof or anywhere in the house with new wood, you should spray and treat the new members with Timbor, because it will over time kill the termites very slowly, and it will be very unappetizing to them. So they will go away. There is no reason to use toxins for termite treatments. If they come back, you just go back and find the areas where they're eating and treat the wood with Timbor again, or if you feel the necessity, you can use one of the non-toxic treatments as well. No reason to use chemicals. Now, what if you look at a place to live and it's a brand new building? It's a brand new house. It's maybe it's a rental, maybe it's a brand new townhouse or a new building that you're going to buy. The thing to be cautious about is that although there are new laws coming up all the time, and lumber companies and building material companies are constantly coming up with new products which are less toxic, generally speaking, to save money, new buildings often have a number of products used in them that have insulation with formaldehyde, have pressure-treated woods with glues and formaldehyde in them, and various other sorts of preservatives in them. They'll have new synthetic carpets with glues in them. Even some of the heating systems will have some plasticized materials in them that have to be outgassed. So if it's a place that you feel very strongly about and you're not a very sensitive person and the place can be ventilated really well, the one thing to consider is to close the house up or the apartment, turn the heat up to its absolute maximum setting. This is before you put furnishings in the house, obviously, and cook the house for several days. This has been used successfully in treating sick buildings. Now, again, this is going to depend on how sensitive you are. If you know yourself to be a sensitive person, you may want to just not go down this road. You may be better off buying an older house and doing renovations to it on your own terms using non-toxic materials. But if you found a house that you absolutely adore and you know that you're not terribly sensitive, cooking the house for several days at maybe even 3 days, completely sealed up without your furniture in it, although it's a bit expensive in terms of heating, heat will outgas a lot of these volatile organic compounds. So it's worth trying, and then airing the place out quite a bit and probably using an air purification system in the house afterwards. The synthetic carpet issue is a big problem. Obviously, these new polyurethane carpets and even nylon carpets are very attractive because they seem to work better in terms of cleaning. But actually, it turns out that carpets in general are kind of a bad idea if you're worried about indoor air pollution, because it's very difficult to keep them sufficiently clean. You're tracking in dirt and mold and pollen and chemicals from outside in the city on your feet all day long, unless you walk around with no shoes, which is something to do. And then they also accumulate moisture and get moldy, both underneath. In general, a wood floor or a natural linoleum floor. You can buy linoleum now from some sources. There's a Natural Leak in Sebastopol, California. Again, in Northern California, sells natural linoleum made from linseed oil. Or a natural flooring, you know, some sort of wood flooring, watching the type of glue that's used, is always going to be better. You can keep it cleaner and you don't have the mold problem. Some area rugs certainly can be used, but interestingly, a natural wood rug is much easier to clean than the synthetics. And synthetic rugs almost never outgas. They maintain toxicity for eons. These are indestructible. They're not breaking down. So they continue to send toxic chemicals into the environment. Additionally, if you're looking at a new place or an old place to rent or own, if you have a forced air heating system, the cleaning ducts have to be cleaned once a year, and they need to be filtered as well. I usually call forced air forced dirt. If you have a gas heater or a wall heater or a gas stove, make sure that you can't smell the odorant. Have PG&E come and check these appliances to make sure they're burning properly. The gas is not as smellable. You're smelling an odorant, but the odorant itself is an irritant as well as the gas. So have everything checked out carefully. I need to take a short musical break. I'm Lena Berman. This is Your Own Health and Fitness, and I'm doing a show alone today about indoor air pollution, what you can do to protect yourself and your family from this problem. I'm going to take a brief musical break, and I'll be right back. Please stay with me. Par-ci par la lunette, pas les yeux bien installés, dis à chaîne. I never feel the same. Ondulé, par-ci par la lunette, pas les yeux bien installés, dis à chaîne. Ondulé, par-ci par la lunette, pas les yeux bien installés, dis à chaîne. I never feel the same. Welcome back. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman, and I'm coming to you alone to do a show on indoor air pollution, what you can do to protect yourself or your family from indoor air pollution. If you miss parts of today's show and you want to get a copy of this or any other in the series, Your Own Health and Fitness, you can always call my information number 24 hours a day at 707-874-2772, or you can go to the website. It's yourownhealthandfitness.com, yourownhealthandfitness.com. And you will also find a link there that you can go to make it possible for us to send you or call you or do whatever to get you some information about a specific air purifier that I've found that I think is quite useful. So for information on air purifiers or for information on what we're doing on the show or for tapes and CDs, yourownhealthandfitness.com. I've been talking about how to pick a house. Let's talk a little bit about renovating a house, because as I mentioned before, some of the worst indoor air pollution comes from building materials, or as I said, also from carpeting and things like that. So one of the things that I did in preparation for the show is I went back to some sources that I've used in the past for myself when I've been in this situation of trying to figure out exactly what to do, what supplies to use and various things like that. So I'd like to kind of let you know about some of them. A book I found very, very helpful, this was so many years ago that it's actually only available in used copies, is a book called The Healthy House by John Bower, B-O-W-E-R, John Bower, B-O-W-E-R. And I noticed that there is the Ex Libris, there's a website. If you just Google The Healthy House by John Bower, you'll find the used copies available. But he apparently is involved in an institute called the Healthy House Institute and has a new book out called Healthy House Building for the New Millennium. The Healthy House Institute has a website, and it's H-H-I-N-S-T, so it's like Healthy House Institute, H-H-I-N-S-T.com. And he's really helpful in terms of alerting you to the kinds of problems that you need to watch for when you're working on a house. I'm looking at a sheet that I downloaded from that website. He has some things that he's mentioned that I've already mentioned on the air, which is to go ahead and build an airtight structure to improve energy efficient, but to make sure that you have lots of ventilation, because you don't want it to be airtight without ventilation. He also talks about checking for radon, which is a kind of odorless, colorless thing that can migrate up from underneath the house. What I did on his advice was, when I renovated a house, was I put down in the crawl space under the house, on the dirt, Visqueen, which is the plastic, the heavy white, sort of clear plastic barrier. One of those situations where normally you wouldn't want to buy that much plastic, but the Visqueen actually lasts for a long time, and you leave it under the house on top of the earth, and it prevents anything, including radon, from coming up through the dirt into the house space, and it also keeps mold down under the plastic. It kills it. It doesn't allow it to come up into the living space. He also suggests using metal or solid wood cabinetry, you know, avoiding these new products that are plasticized and have lots of glues. He talks about using water-based adhesives and caulks and paints, and I'll give you the names of some suppliers for those. He warns people about carpeting, as I do. Again, talks about avoiding products with formaldehyde, and it's in wood products for the most part, and it's also in a lot in plywood and laminated beams and fiberglass. Insulation is full of formaldehyde. It is possible now to buy wood that's not preserved in formaldehyde. There are, as I mentioned, there's increasingly available alternatives. There is a mill in Northern California, in Casadero, California, called Barry's Mill, which has non-treated with, you know, wood that's not treated with formaldehyde. And it also has, there's also now available in a variety of stores, strand board, which is the used instead of the pressure, you know, particle board. That's the word I want. Particle board is pretty toxic stuff. It's got formaldehyde and lots of glue in it. But a strand board, which is the stuff that looks like kind of looks like a collage of chips of wood, is now being put together using a soy product. And I have used some of this, and it's not. I'm sensitive, so I notice when things are toxic, and it's not. It's pretty easy to use. So you have to make sure you're getting the right stuff, so you have to ask lots of questions. And it's harder with insulation. I'll go over that in a moment. He also reminds you to be very careful about combustion in the house. So if you're using a gas range, you have to make sure that you've got lots of ventilation and a functional fan over it that actually takes the fumes out. You know, if you're using any kind of gas heater, nowadays you can buy gas heaters that vent to the outside instead of the other. He also says not to believe everything you hear, so to be very careful about who you're dealing with and become educated and smart about these things and ask good questions. One of the things that I was mentioning here is the visqueen on the ground. This is going back to the moisture control issue. This is very important to do because once mold infiltrates a house, it's very difficult to get it out. One of the things along with the moisture barrier under the house is to make sure that anytime you put windows or doors in, that you put flashing in a way that it causes moisture to wick out away from the windows and the doors. Again, ventilation is absolutely imperative here, and the house needs to be kept warm and dry. So you do want to make sure that you're using some heat that you can afford so that you're not turning the heat off for long periods of time, because mold will just really enjoy having a cold house to grow in. Other ways to avoid having mold growth is that you can use like a very low wattage light bulb. It has to be a regular incandescent bulb, like a 40-watt bulb, and leave it on in places where mold tends to grow because it won't grow in the presence of light. So in your crawl space or in your basement or even in your bathroom if there's a problem. But mostly you want to make sure that you've got lots of ventilation and fans and that the house is well heated. If you are using forced air, as I said, I like to call this forced dirt, make sure that you're having the ducts cleaned once a year. There are better choices for heating systems. The better kinds of heat is going to be radiant heat. So the absolute best heat ever for anybody, in my experience, is to use hydronic heat, which is where it's radiant heat either in pipes under the floor, or you have radiators, or you have baseboards with water going through it. Now, if you're living in a municipal district, if you're living in a town where you've got natural gas, this is actually going to be pretty cost effective. It gets more expensive when you're using propane, and it is possible to run a water heater or a pump on electricity if you have solar. You'd have to make sure that you're living in a place where you've got enough light for solar that you get exposure during the sunny time of the year, pretty much for 6 to 8 hours, not for maybe 4 or 5 hours. But radiant heat using hydronics is wonderful. It's very even, and it can keep the house at an even temperature without spending a lot of money because you're just heating the water. Other forms of heat that work to keep the house dry, surprisingly, is that if you have a really good airtight wood stove, the newest wood stoves, if they're burning properly, emit almost no particulates into the air. But these are the newest stoves, and they are very airtight to the room. And if you use them properly, if you open the door very slowly when you open it, and you, again, have proper ventilation in the house, wood heat is good because it keeps the house extremely dry. In fact, sometimes it's too dry even. But it does protect the house from mold to have a good, you know, if you have a good wood heat source and you're using wood that's recycled. There are these logs that you can buy that are made without glues. They're just pressure treated and they're recycled wood products. So they're environmentally fairly sustainable. Other forms of heat that are less problematical for people are electric heat, except that some people are sensitive to electromagnetic fields. The radiator style ones with the oil in them, the sort of ones that DeLonghi was the first one that made them, are pretty good. If it's not terribly cold where you are, or if your house is very well insulated, those will work pretty well without a lot of electromagnetic fields being created. There are even fancier electric heaters also. Something else to think about are some of the ceramic heaters. These are the old-style heaters that actually have a sort of ceramic inside that gets heated by coils. The thing to watch out for with ceramic heaters, or any heater with a coil like that that gets really hot, is that if they're not vacuumed out and cleaned a lot, you will actually fry a lot of dust on that surface, and that's an irritant. That's another combustion product that can be irritating. So those things have to be kept very clean. When you buy any products to renovate a house or to paint a house, to fix a house or an apartment up, it's very important to look for zero VOC products, volatile organic compounds. You can find them. You should look for them, zero VOC products. You can, if you want, go to more actual natural paints and finishes. A couple of companies that do a really good job. One is Auro, which is A-U-R-O, Auro Paints and Finishes. Their website is A-U-R-O, Auro, USA. So A-U-R-O-USA.com. Or you can call them at 707-763-0663. Another company is Safecoat by AFM, and their website is afmsafecoat.com, afmsafecoat.com. These are latex paints. They're not natural in the sense that they are latex, but it's a very good company that tries very hard to protect people from pollutants in the environment. But I have found that many of the large paint companies now are making zero VOC paints, and some of them are absolutely fabulous and only slightly more expensive than the traditional paints. These are all water-based paints. You also, as I said before, need to watch your wood products, avoiding formaldehyde-preserved glues and things like that. One way to avoid these things is also to use recycled wood, which is sometimes pricey, but it can be found. And if you're doing a fairly large product, a project, sometimes you can actually find large amounts of it at a reasonable price. I've mentioned before that uncovered wood floors are best, and you can buy products to coat the floors, to seal the floors now with that are, again, zero VOC plasticizers, which are, for most people, not an irritant, and when they're dry, have no odor at all. For people who are really super sensitive, people are even using something like, if you're doing hydronic heat, you can even do a clay floor. There are people available who will do a clay floor. You have to do this when you're not living in the house, because it takes several layers, and it's mixed with linseed oil to keep it watertight. The problem with a clay floor is that some people are sensitive to linseed oil, and you probably know who you are if you've been exposed to anyone who's doing any painting, oil painting. Linseed oil sometimes is irritating, but I've been around clay floors, and they're not smelly after they've had a chance to set. Insulation is another tricky business because insulation is the traditional form of insulation is usually fiberglass, and particularly the pink fiberglass is really toxic stuff. It's filled with formaldehyde. My impression is that you can sometimes buy the yellow fiberglass and have it be ever so slightly less toxic. My experience is that I just stay away from formaldehyde, so I sort of stay away from fiberglass unless it's going to be sealed away from the environment. Now, you want to use a vapor barrier when you're using insulation anyway. So if you're using a tar paper or visqueen between the fiberglass and the inside air environment, and it's a good seal, you could maybe use fiberglass but try to get the stuff that's less, that if you can find the stuff without the formaldehyde, you'd be better off. Just make sure it's sealed from the environment so that you're not getting any intrusion. Some of the rigid insulation is a little bit less toxic. This is not for everybody. I mean, there are people who can't tolerate any of these things. For really sensitive people, blown insulation is probably better, which is where they use cellulose, you know, like leftover newsprint and things. Again, here, if someone's very sensitive, I don't know. But for most people, this stuff is pretty inert. It can be blown into the attic. It can be blown into your walls. It's not going to be as strong as something like fiberglass. In roofing, you know, in your inside ceiling and under your house, a wonderful form of insulation can be used in the walls as well, is Reflectix, which is like bubble wrap with aluminum foil over it. It has to be put in with an air space between. It explains how to do it, but it has to be put in correctly. It has to be an airspace between the Reflectix and the wall or the floor or the ceiling. But it works quite well and doesn't intrude the environment with chemicals. Just want to remind you, you're listening to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman, doing a show alone about indoor air pollution. And right now I'm talking a little bit about products to help protect you while you're doing stuff in your house. Caulking compounds are really a problem. AFM does have some alternatives for caulks. Some caulks outgas and sort of get over themselves faster than others, but they are they're pretty toxic for most people, and their smells can persist for a long time. Oil-based paints can be a big problem, and wood preservatives, things like copper green, I would avoid at all costs, unless, you know, even if you if you're going to use it, I would coat it afterwards with some kind of plastic that hasn't got any VOCs. But there are alternatives for this stuff. Again, don't tent or spray for pests in the house. If you're looking at an apartment, ask about whether or not they have a service that comes in and sprays the building. Some people are smart enough to know that if you spray the outside of a building, it will keep the ants or the cockroaches from coming inside, that you don't have to spray the inside environment to get rid of these things. And in fact, as I've said, they don't work very well, so they have to be repeated over and over again. Don't live in a place where there are pesticides. There are various people who do forms of integrated pest management. There are even companies here in the North Bay. There's BioPest, but there are other companies, I believe, where an entomologist will come and use non-toxic substances to attract the insects away from your house, and even in some cases it will eventually kill them because they'll be using things like diatomaceous earth, which eventually causes problems for them. But it will keep the toxins out of your house. Again, borate products are very good for killing or over a long haul and detracting termites and other insects. Remember also that ants are a natural predator for termites, so sometimes you want to leave some of the ants around. It should be clear that you should watch your cleaning products in terms of maintaining clean indoor air. Window cleaners are pretty awful, I'm afraid, and I will say that using vinegar and water, it works pretty well. It's not kind of as much of a cheap thrill as window sprays, but you can add some water and vinegar to a spray bottle and find that it works pretty well. There are companies like some of these non-toxic companies that are making newer products with different kinds of cleaners and surfactants in them that are a little less toxic. Obviously, avoid oven cleaners. There are ways to clean ovens without using oven cleaners. It's not easy to do. A self-cleaning oven is a help, although if you're going to use a self-cleaning oven, you really don't want to be around when you're doing it. You're going to be burning off material inside the oven. You should have fans going and all the windows opened, and you should leave when it's happening. Laundry products, as I mentioned, there are alternatives. There are personal products also that are now made with without fragrances and with less toxic materials. I think some of you may remember I did a show with the Environmental Working Group, which has a list of some of the toxins that appear in personal products. Certainly, most of you know to avoid using fluoride in your toothpaste. We're finding out more and more bad things about fluoride, including the fact that it hangs out in your body for a very long time and is very hard to get rid of once it's there. So don't add any more to it. But among all the other things, too, personal products like hair dyes, nail polishes, fragrances, even things that women use for their hygiene purposes that are highly bleached can be a problem. So a place to read about products to use in the home and personal products that are a little bit safer, another person that I know from my past is Deborah Lynn Dadd, D-A-D-D, Deborah D-E-B-R-A, Lynn, L-Y-N-N, Dadd, D-A-D-D. She has a book called Home Safe Home, Home Safe Home, which talks about personal products, alternatives to that, laundry products, cleaning products, things to use in the house. Her website is DLD, for Deborah Lynn Dadd, DLD123.com, DLD123.com. Her book again, Home Safe Home. Now, another place that's really a problem is when you very innocently go out and try to buy a new mattress. Well, surprise, surprise, it's illegal in most states for bedding companies to sell mattresses and box springs without flame retardant. So there are companies, some of you know about the European sleep shops that have European products that are not sprayed, that use natural cottons and latex. People vary in terms of their sensitivity to latex, so you still need to sort of test these things out. Some of these places that sell these materials will also give you a trial so that you can make sure that you're okay with the stuff. Be very careful about bedding. I've discovered also that IKEA is selling the stuff that looks like European furniture and bedding, but in fact it is sprayed, I called them. Imported furniture is filled with pesticides. They're sprayed to come into this country. If you want to buy these pieces of furniture, the best thing to do, and this includes things like if you're going to get something that's particle board or something that's laminate, for people who are less sensitive, put the furniture unassembled or even assembled out in full sun and leave it there to outgas for quite a while before you start putting these things together and put them in your house. Make sure they're outgassed in the sun. The sun is an amazing deodorizer. I mean, if you can avoid these products, that's better, but older furniture might be an option. But also, the sun is a great detoxer. So let me end by talking a bit about air purification versus air filtering. Now, obviously, the first thing you want to do is to do various things to avoid the toxicity in your house, to avoid the mold, not wear shoes in your house, not have carpets in your house, to clean the house and vacuum it frequently, you know, and to not use toxic products in the house. But you may find that the use of an air purification unit, it will be useful to you because it takes down the volume quite a bit. So it makes it a lot easier to keep up on. There's so many things you can't control for in the outside world that comes tracked into your house. And also when your windows and doors are open, although the outdoor air is a lot less polluted than the indoor air, if you're pollen sensitive or mold sensitive, the stuff is going to be blowing in from the outside, and a good air purifier can help to detoxify the air. I have found this useful. Now, there are various different technologies. There's ozone-inators versus negative ion generators. There is a product that I like, and like I said, if you want to go to my website, you can find the link on your own health and fitness to air purification, and we can send you material. It is using a new technology. It was developed for industry and sold only to industry until a company took it over. It is sold only through, you have to buy it through a distributor. It uses a combination of UV light and photohydroionization and electron generation inside the unit. There's no UV light filtration. There's nothing in the environment. So it actually is working in a way. Well, the way they describe it is it's like nature, the way nature clears the air after a rainstorm, which is very kind of poetic. But in fact, when Dr. Fawcett read the literature, what he discovered is that he did a book on smog many years ago for his dissertation, and this unit does work like smog is created in reverse. So it reverses the smog-creating chemicals. That's the way it works. Lastly, take your antioxidants. Take your vitamin C 3 times a day. It's a fabulous antihistamine. There are homeopathic remedies. There's BioAllers, which has a whole series of homeopathic liquid remedies that are for everything from pollen allergies and mold allergies, all sorts of allergies that work very well if you use them according to the label. Starting to use nettle tincture now before all of the pollens blossom would be a good idea, and using it throughout the season would help a lot. So that's your basic overview about indoor air pollution. Keep your house clean, avoid toxic products, keep the house ventilated and dry, don't let it get moist. Do what you can to protect yourself inside the house by not using toxic products and keeping everything well ventilated and warm. And then if you need it, air purification, again, my website has a link. Mind yourself. Do remember that stress does make all things worse. So do take care of yourself when the season comes and you feel more irritated. Again, vitamin C is a fabulous antihistamine. Don't forget the obvious antihistamines that we have available right over the counter at our health food store. So I want to thank you all for listening. I'm Lena Berman. If you need more information or you want a cassette copy of this or any other in the series, Your Own Health and Fitness, you can call my information number 24 hours a day. My number is, once again, 707-874-2772. That's 707-874-2772. For a list of other available shows or information about guests or what we did on the show today, you can go to the website, yourownhealthandfitness.com. And this is yourownhealthandfitness.com. You'll also find a link, as I said, to information about air purification. There'll be information again on subscribing to the new newsletter, The Progressive Health Observer, a news commentary alternative to Big Box Medicine. And that I think that about covers all the information you can get on the website. We probably will be having some sample articles from the newsletter up there soon. Your Own Health and Fitness is a joint production of Your Own Health and Fitness, 8.5 by 11 Productions, and KPFA-FM. The engineer for Your Own Health and Fitness is Eddie Pay. Remember, being informed not only protects your health, it protects your freedom.